Blog Talk Radio.
Sitting on the top of the roof, the bridge is on mine. Steam engines roll by, the bridges fall down, and so do my dreams. Boy, you hear me calling your name, the bridge is your time, your engine rolls hot. If the bridges fall down, don't lose your head of steam. Young man, I'm counting on you, and whoa, young man, I'm counting on you. Boy, I didn't make it too far, but baby, you are the family star. I'll tighten your seams, don't lose your head of dreams. Boy, you hear me calling your name, the bridge is your time, your engine rolls hot. If the bridges fall down, don't lose your head of steam. Young man, I'm counting on you, and whoa, whoa, young man, I'm counting on you to get me to the other side. Hey, 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 hey. Is new, whatever you do is up to you, but do me this, do don't lose your head of dreams. Young man, I'm counting on you, and whoa, young man, I'm counting on you.
Thank you for joining us tonight. What a crazy week. Lots of rain and dreariness, but it was a productive week. So that's always a good thing. For those that are just joining us, our creative table is really just a forum where we get together with guests, primarily women in business, but also any type of business that caters to women, providing what they need. We chose women in business because that is what I am in business, and I am a mom of three. And I just wanted a forum where women can openly talk about personal and professional topics, share tips, guidance, suggestions, and really walk away with lots of good nuggets from each other, so that they can apply it in their lives. And tonight's show, I'm really excited about because I've always had a passion for working with our boys. As I mentioned, I have three children, and my oldest is my only boy. So I always had this high expectation, I guess, to try to fill in. Not that his father was absent in his life, but I know how vital and how important it is for our boys to have guidance. Our girls too. But as a mom, I think I overthought it. I was so determined that I wanted my son to be a good man that I took extra care, or I took extra interest in reading articles and tips for moms that are raising boys and things like that. I turned to mentors to help me, to give me some tips and things like that. So I'm hoping that the women that are listening tonight walk away hearing a male's point of view. Tonight's guest is that male that I'm speaking of, and that is Dr. Marco Clark. I see that you are on the air. Is that you?
I'm here. I'm ready for our conversation.
Good, because I've told you I can't wait to pick your brain. I always like to give the different perspectives, the male and that female. And as a woman, I really take heed to the input from men, and I do try some of the things that they say. So I'm hoping people are going to walk away with both of us giving our input and some great valuable guidance and, like I said, tips and things of that nature. But let me introduce you, because you are really, really, really something else. You're known as America's toughest principal. And one of the things, there's a lot of things that you said, but one of the first things that jumped out at me is how you say that it's the community's job. We have to come together and help raise our children, and the families have to work together. And I've always felt really strong about that. It doesn't matter the dynamic of your family, whether you're together as parents or not. That's that co-parenting thing. But why don't we, before we dive in, I'm not even going to read your bio. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Dr. Clark, and then we can dive into the combo.
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for this opportunity and the opportunity to be on and talk with a world-class person that has a vision and an understanding of what we need to do to heal our community. And so I just thank you for the work that you're doing. I have this long bio that really, you know, I'm thankful for and excited about. But the biggest passion that I have is the work that I'm able to do. And I am a nationwide advocate for community and young people. I'm also a nationwide advocate for building families together and employing black men and fathers to be strong in the lives of their children, because we are needed. We're consistently needed. And there's something about what it means to have a father or a surrogate father or a father figure in the lives of our young people that's so important for them to move forward. So the work that I've done, and I've been thankful that I was able to have my father in my life steadfast and strong until 5 years ago when he passed on, but taught me everything that I know. The man that I am today is because of my dad, the gentleman who taught me how to tie a tie and how to tie a bow tie, how to be respectful and how to show chivalry towards young ladies and women and to our elderly, and to be an example for the community. And so with that, I take that inside of the school building that I operate in our organization, and we've been able to take that and make it infectious across the board about how we're going to serve before we can lead. And so my background is grounded in all of that. There's a lot of things that goes on with it, but I can let folks find that out about me as we move forward.
Yeah, and we'll definitely share your website, and hopefully people will take out the time to go see exactly what you're doing, because the community support doesn't always have to be in person. It can be from a distance. And I believe more and more people are looking for outlets that they can contribute to, whether that's time, energy, mentorship. I know there's a lot of people that are retired from business that always look for opportunities where they can guide our youth. So I definitely will share your website and hope that people will see what you're doing and see if it's something that they can help right from where they are. Now, the school that you're talking about that you had, you are the founder and chief executive officer of the Richard Wright Public Charter School for Journalism and Media Arts out there in Washington, D.C., right?
That's correct. And now, we are working with some of the lower socioeconomic students in the District of Columbia, and we are training our kids to go out and have a different voice. We're training them to be you. We're training them to make sure that they can be another voice for the young people, because what's happening on the news at 4, 5, 6 o'clock is that they're telling a negative story of them, and nobody's allowing them to tell their own story. And so at Richard Wright Public Charter School, that's what we're focusing on.
And how is that? One of your methods that you tie in that journalism and media arts. Where did that idea and that concept come? Because that's creativity, and I'm a firm advocate of creativity. Add creativity to anything that you're doing. I don't care if it's math. It has a way of sticking, right, in the mind and growing, helping you grow.
Well, you know, the nationwide data states that, you know, most of our kids are reading 3 to 5 grade levels behind in urban America. And nobody's really likes to fess up to that. But many of the kids show up in high school and they're reading. They show up in ninth grade and they're reading on about a second grade level. And so the premise behind the journalism and media arts is that it requires you to research. You can't research if you can't read. And so understanding that, you know, we want to make these great journalists, we had to improve their reading skills. The thought behind that is, if I improve your reading skills, your writing skills will improve. And as we get those two to connect together, then you will develop a voice where you can go and use your voice to advocate for your community one person at a time. And recognizing that we are a 21st century world right now, technology is all around us. And so with that, we added a media arts portion that will allow our kids to access social media properly, to have etiquette and professionalism with it. We also wanted to make sure that they could create their own films that will really tell a story other than what will be told on the news every night about them. Because the reality is that we have 90% of our young people who are really entrenched on doing the proper work and doing things great. It's 10% that's of the negative students that are being highlighted all of the time and not really telling the story. And so we felt that having a school for journalism and media arts will be very creative. It will work on the deficiencies that's happening in our community and provide a voice for our young people to tell their story, and then make some other folks get involved with how they can support the young people in their community across this country.
Yeah, because that's self-expression. That leads, like you said, that's it's a trickle effect. I think, number one, it might pique the interest of a lot of youth, right, in students having the creative edge. But like you said, the research, that takes thought, that takes concentration, that takes learning abilities. And then also the extension of that is they're able to self-express and be and use their imagination. And then I tie it into healing. It's a form of healing. Because if you can learn how to channel your anger, because we don't have to talk about their right to be angry, okay? We got to look for solutions, is what I believe. And I just feel there's not as many outlets. There used to be the recreation centers everywhere. At least I'm from Connecticut, so I can remember having 5, 6 recreation in within the first, you know, to two towns, joining towns. I think we're down to like two or three, and three being, you know, not used as much. And even in those recreation centers, it's sports. There's no anything jarring or stimulating the brain. So I thank you for including that creative edge, because there is healing in the arts.
You know, I'm thankful that I am one of a few, but there's not enough Dr. Clarks. There's not enough of us really telling the truth about exactly what's happening in our community. There's not enough of us talking about why we need more males in the classroom, why we need more black fathers at home, why we need more surrogate fathers, why we need more mentoring. Nobody's really telling the truth. And we get to the crux of the matter is that we have some real ills in our community that people need to really step up and address. Let's, you know, we talk about we need more, and a lot of times folks say they need more money to fix a problem. The truth is that we need more people to do solid action steps to get things done. We need people to really step up and say, hey, you know, there are some parents that are really not doing their job, and these kids are suffering because of the fact that they have negligent parents that are not involved. Let's talk about the fact that our school systems are broken because some of the people that are working in those school systems, people aren't telling them the truth to try to either grow them in a very positive way to help our young people, and we're not really telling the truth about the behavior that our, some of our young people are demonstrating. Because the reality is if you can look at the behavior and begin to make a diagnosis of it and create a plan to fix it, then we can begin to see growth and positive change in our community. And behind that, that goes along with our school in journalism and media arts, one of the things that I've shared with our kids is that we can't create garbage. There's enough garbage out there. You guys have to tell a story that really gets to the root of all issues that young people are faced with. Begin to use their voice to tell the story, because adults, we can tell a story, but it does not have the same effect is that as you hear it from a young person's mouth that's talking about the challenges that they're going through. And those are some of the issues that we need to make sure as a whole that we're doing it. Because our kids are failing across this country, and everybody's just talking about providing more resources, but that's not the total issue.
No, no, it's just a piece of the pie. I think it's really just in the beginning stages. And now you have a mouthful there, because you mentioned working with the elderly. How important is it for our youth to stay in touch? Because to know thyself, you mentioned teaching them, right? Telling them the truth of our history, right? So where are they getting this truth from? Isn't it important to be connected to the older generations? Because the truth, that's the origin. Right?
You know, part of what's happening is that you're correct. No one's teaching history. It's like, unfortunately, in our community, it's like no one wants to know what happened before. And me being a former social studies teacher, being a school educator for all these years, I've seen the digression of individuals who are of kids with a lack of desire. You know, one of the things that the Jewish community got correct is that they said never again. But the only way you can say never again is that you got to know what happened before. And part of what we are contending with is that there's a community where folks lack the desire to even know what happened in the past. Because whatever, for whatever reason, we don't want to languish in that, but we're languishing because we refuse to teach it. And we can continue to say rebuild it. Part of the reason that I am not a proponent for traditional public schools and that I am advocate for student choice and school choice is because we have a bunch of broken systems that no one wants to go back and look at the root of the issues in order to fix them. And so that's the same thing you're talking about when it comes down to history. We have all of these challenges, but nobody really wants to be truthful about the root of the issue that got us to this point where the challenges are there and why our kids are not respecting the level of education and the level of working with elderly and their elders and those that are older to learn from them is because no one has taught them and they didn't go back to look to see what happened or learn about what happened in the past.
Yeah, and I know, I don't know about you, but I know when I so enjoy sitting with those from the former, you know, the previous generations, the elderly. I guess my mind just goes into listening to their story. It's absolutely amazing if you just sit and you talk and listen to the elderly's personal stories, and then you're able to connect on some level in some type of situation, and I think then you feel connected. Now, are we talking connected to go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that there was a factor of the elderly that, you know, fortunately our generation had the ability to be able to connect with. Unfortunately, the young people that we are serving now, grandmom's 35 years old. Great grandmom's 40 years old. The reality is that there is no history, and we've created these gaps that the young people are having difficulty learning from, because the folks that we're serving are great grandmothers at 40 years old, and they never learned any history. And so it's a domino effect that's creating this monster of a challenge in our community, and nobody really wants to address that. I created this thing called Man the Block, a Safe Passage in Washington, D.C., because of the fact the kids were being beat up by other kids that looked just like them. Unfortunately, in our community, we don't want to face the challenges or really stand up to the people that create all of these challenges and really figure out how to fix it. I'm a solution maker in around how we make things better. And part of what I do is just to be truthful about what I feel and what I see. Nothing can ever be changed if you don't address the issues and you don't teach the people who are ignorant to the information. And part of that is that we've created a generational gap where there is no Big Mama anymore. There is no Papa anymore. They don't exist. And so we're still expecting something from our kids and expecting something from these parents that will not exist. And in order to fix that, we're going to have to really, the teachers and the leaders and the ministers are going to have to go back and teach the congregation, teach the parents, teach the children the truth about the history for those of us that know it, if we're going to stop this cancer that continues to spread.
Because that's exactly what it is. And as you were talking, I can almost hear my father's voice. Whenever us kids, there's six of us, and when anybody would get into something, you know, you come back with so-and-so's house, Johnny or Susie is doing such and such. My father said, what goes on in these four walls? That's all I can do is try to guide you kids and give you my input. But, you know, it's so true, because understanding truly is prevention. And I don't think we give kids as much credit as we should about when a kid wants something, when a student wants something, a youth, they can want something and have a dream that starts as early as 7, 8, 10. Look at all these young entrepreneurs. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of factors in that too, the guidance of the parents and things of that nature, where maybe some don't. And we're talking about an underserved population that you primarily work with. So I get that, but it's just the point of it all. And like you said, there's no more grandmas, you know, there's no Big Mamas, there's no Papas. So even the Papas were teaching you how to fix cars, how to, you know, do things with your hand, how to build. Mamas were teaching you how to cook. So girls aren't learning how to do girl stuff, women stuff, and boys aren't learning how to do men stuff. How do you get that parent involved? Because something you said earlier popped out at me too. You said we're not even being honest with ourselves as a culture about what our real issues are. Well, I believe when you have children, I've never been fond of the term at risk, okay? However, just for the purposes of this content and the conversation, at risk, troubled youth, a lot of the parents, unfortunately, are uneducated, and that affects their ability to guide or help their child. Also, they come from maybe highly dysfunctional homes, single-parent homes, drug abuse homes, and we're not going to give, we're not going to shed. I'm not going to be a part of shedding the negative light, but we're talking truth. So how important is parent involvement, and how do you get parents involved? Do you?
You know, parent involvement is so critical. to the success of any school, any organization that relates to children. And so for me, I want all parents, good, bad, or indifferent. I don't care if you curse, because I curse too. I don't care if you if you come in acting raggedy. That nothing scares me when it comes down to a parent. What I want people to understand and to make sure that everybody's clear is the fact that we can't ostracize those parents because they have to be the greatest advocate. They come in cursing because they advocating with their children, for their children. What else do you want them to do? It is the job of those who are in the positioning to reframe and reposition their mindset, to let them understand what they are supposed to be doing and understanding how they could be more effective as parents if they are working alongside with the individuals within the institution. I have great parent involvement. And one of the reasons that I have great parent involvement is because I have a high expectation of my parents. But it's twofold. I have a high expectation of them, and then I turn around and say to them, and I need you to have a high expectation of me. And so by opening up a gate that says that you can expect a lot from me because I'm going to expect a lot from you, opens up a door that allows us to be able to start a conversation. The parent is more acceptable into creating this relationship because now, no matter if they don't have teeth and can't speak proper English, if I've said to them, you still have a right to have an expectation of me with my little PhD, then that means that you matter. And so I'm having these conversations with parents because they recognize that they matter. Their voice matters. Now, do I always like what they come in with? No. But the reality is that I'm here to do a job, and I can't break away from that because the kid should be the first thing that matters in every situation.
Yeah, and it's almost like it breaks that, and this I know is in our culture as an proud African-American woman, a lot of times it was children be seen and not heard. So I think with you, as you say, how you're opening up the door, just that little bit, for children, for youth students, can be such a big, make such a big impact. Sometimes I've heard children say the brightest part of their day is going to school, their favorite teacher, their favorite principal. So the impact is real. Never doubt that it's not making an impact in a child's life. And I think just being able to have a safe zone to where they can really express themselves. And like you said, it's not always that you like how maybe they're saying things, but I believe you said this a couple of times, the broken system. How broken is our system? Or in all fairness, do our educators have reason? Do they care as much, or are they scared? Is that why they're not? The majority, there's always a handful. I think the majority. Go ahead.
You ask a question that I think is so powerful, and then that folks need to understand, is that I'm an advocate for educators because educators have given their life to service. They've given their lives to service and to build others up, and they get beat down a lot. The reality is that, you know, they're blamed for a kid not being able to read as if it was their fault when the child came to kindergarten and didn't know their ABCs or their 1, 2, 3s or their colors. You know, by the time they get to seventh grade and the child's still struggling with reading, the teachers are blamed. The parents feel the right because there's some taxpayer dollar that goes into, even if they don't pay no taxes, they still want their voice, which is rightfully so. But the reality is that I own you, I'll get you fired. Teachers get beat up a lot, and educators get beat up a lot. And it used to be a very respectful and respectable profession to be in. And unfortunately, we moved away from that, especially in the Black community. We got to do better. And we got to do better with understanding that these are the gatekeepers to everything that's going to be successful in our community. And so I advocate for those teachers because they give their lives. They've been trained. They've spent their dollars. They have student loans. all out of the yazoo. They have to pay just so that they can be trained enough to do what's necessary for kids. And a lot of times they're totally disrespected. I've asked parents before, would you ever go into your doctor's office and they told you that you needed surgery or you needed to take a particular medicine to cure a disease? Would you curse that doctor out? You wouldn't, because you trusted that doctor has been trained. Well, the same years of training that that the doctor partook in order to become a particular doctor is the same number of years that these educators decided to go through in order to become certified to teach our children. And we must respect it the same way we respect any other profession that's out there, because the educators are the gatekeepers to every other profession. And we have to do better as a community with respecting that.
Absolutely, especially we have a lot of coaches and personal coaches and small group coaches. So, yeah, teaching is, educators are the gateway. And it's funny because my daughter-in-law is a teacher, and I can recall when she was going through school, I helped her a couple of times study and prepare. I was so proud when she graduated and she went right into teaching. And all of her excitement and everything, I would say it was an adjustment period. Now, she's teaching, I believe it was second grade, don't quote me, but I know they were young. So she had to adjust because it wasn't just going in there teaching. She had many behavioral issues with the children that I don't think she was necessarily prepared for. So I believe with the encouragement of her coworkers and peers and her principal, I think one of the principals when she first started wasn't as supportive to the teachers. And that really affected the teachers. And then once they got another principal, that principal happened to encourage the teachers. And then you started noticing everybody's spirit coming back and excitement and joy of teaching. So you're so on point about we don't need to criticize them, hit them over the head. We need to find ways to even encourage and support them because it isn't their job to raise our kids. And sometimes I don't know if parents get that mixed up, that they're going to school and the teacher's job is not to raise them. But how did you tell me about you? Like, when did you get your first interest in teaching? Were you a teacher? You went right into being a principal. Like you said, there's a process that you went through that you didn't really talk about. But like, when did you get that first desire that this is what I want to be?
I'm going to tell you, at 10 years old, I was a spelling bee champion. At 11 years old, I was told by a raggedy guidance counselor, in my opinion, that I was functionally illiterate. I spent 5 years in high school. I scored 480 on an SAT. I graduated from high school with a 1.6 grade average, and I got rejected to over 150 colleges and universities. My educational journey in public school was awful. And it wasn't until I got to college and got with a professor that he actually highlighted the challenges that I had with academics. I promised myself once I got it together that I would continue to push and that I would go back and I would become that teacher that no child would have to sit in through the challenges that I had and feel the way that they did. So I became a trained person while in college. I did my student teaching, and I became a teacher. And then I worked my way through the ranks where I was a teacher, a dean, assistant principal, a principal, and then I decided to open up my own organization. And so now I'm the founder and CEO of two public charter schools and in the process of working on a third one to open up in a different state that we're doing because we have to expand this work of moving kids forward. But I got the title America's Toughest Principal because I will not let up. I'm going to continue to fight because the reality of what we have to do is bigger than any challenge I've ever had. And I don't take lightly. So what I say to parents, I mean it because I need them to get in the game and be about the business of our young people and raising them properly. I fortunately had two great parents, but they trusted a system. And I came up in the 70s where, you know, when integration really started going along and, you know, and kids were being taught by these white teachers, and they felt good about it, you know. And so, unfortunately, it was a mistake, in my opinion, that we just took our kids and pushed them into this integration. And I was at a school where it was predominantly African-American and Hispanic kids, but we had an array of teachers that did not look like us. And so we couldn't relate to them, which meant that we had some challenges academically, not because we weren't smart, but because it was a different cultural shock that we faced. And many of our kids are faced with different cultural shocks that we are working, whether the teacher looks just like them or not, doesn't mean that they can't have a cultural shock. And there's a lot of things that go along with it. So with that training, I promised myself that I would not let anybody get in the way of any student that wants to learn. And so we've had 5 graduating classes every year. 100% of those kids are accepted to 5 or more colleges or universities. It's a requirement. 100% of those kids must complete 200 hours of community service. 100% of those kids must turn in a 20-page thesis paper, which they must defend before they can graduate. 100% of those kids are going to go on and do something great because we push them regardless of their circumstances. I don't care about that. They just must be great young people that's going to be committed to changing America and changing this world.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, too, when you were talking. I was like, when I think of even community service, we're teaching, you talk about teaching the kids, you know, helping them get involved, the journalism, the media. That takes engagement with the community. So these students are learning so much more than just an assignment. They're learning effective communication, how to lead, how to overcome fears. So I was saying every time I see youth or young people doing community service, it's because they got in trouble. What happened to, why do we got to put the stigma like that's a bad thing? You know, community service, we should be awarded, pump them up, make them feel good that they're doing things within the community, hands on. How different do you feel?
Absolutely.
Do you feel that you're alone in your mission? I know you don't. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. It's not that you're alone, but that your perspective. And you mentioned earlier about the non-traditional methods that you might believe work within this educational system. Do you feel like a foreigner?
You know, the non-traditional way of working, we got to begin to think out of the box. There's no straight line to changing communities. And if we think that we can go A to Z, that's going to work, that's the reason why our systems are broken now. Because some person that had this bright idea had no idea how to effectuate change and had no idea how to work or how children think, decided to create a plan that's not worthy of working with our children. And it is helping us go backwards. We're going to continue to do great things if we can understand the folks that we work with. Listen, the greatest thing that happens with doctors is that the reason that you see so much success with the way that medicine increases and the way that the medical field grows in a positive way is because every person is diagnosed what? Individually. The problem with education is that we do things holistically. When we work with families, we do things holistically. We don't take a diagnosis of each individual situation because we have that many problems in our community that you can't do a holistic diagnosis and expect change. And so that takes a leader that is unafraid to face the reality of the challenges. It takes leaders that a leader that's going to build other leaders to help address the mass issues of the challenges that we have. And it takes a person that has a purpose agenda to get it done.
Yeah, serving before leading. That's what you said, right? Serving before
exactly.
Leading. So how important is mentorship Because these are things that we, as individuals within the community, can do. How important is mentorship?
Every person should be involved with some kind of mentoring program, even if you only give an hour a week of your time. Everyone has an hour a week. I mean, folks are spending time in Starbucks wasting an hour. You can do something to help somebody. And you mentioned earlier, I have about 50 mentees that I talk to on FaceTime at various places across the country. You know, those 50 mentees, they were my students. They graduated, but they now need support to nurture them through college. And so we have our times where we are talking, and they're not right there, but I can see them because we got technology that's in place now. There is no excuse for folks not to mentor others and to be involved, because technology has bridged the gap of how we can make things happen. And I'm expecting everybody to get out and make some mentoring happen. Our community will heal by more than one solution, not just one action.
Right.
And if we can continue to do that, if everybody gets involved, we'll see changes. You can't be afraid of the people who are downtrodden if you've never stepped in to help them get up.
That's right. And you know what? Just like you said, different talents, different skills, different personalities. You're dealing with a whole bunch of different personalities, so we need a bunch of different personalities to mentor. And the beauty in that, too, and the flip side of that mentor, so many people are looking for something to do and to be involved with. You say the beauty is also in technology. I 100% agree, but also the beauty to me is in I can pick and choose what I want to get involved with. I might like to do crafts. I might like to sing a song. I might want to teach a group. I might crochet. I might be a decoder. It can go on and on, but the beauty is whatever you are, for those that are listening, whatever you like, whatever your passion is, you can intertwine that into mentoring or helping our students. Tell me, since we're talking about that, and it's almost, wow, it went by, what is it that you need from us?
I need continued support of the work and the advancement that we can do to spread it across the country. I ask folks to follow me on Facebook at Dr. Marco Clark. You follow me on Instagram at Dr. Marco Clark, or you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Marco Clark. Or they can reach me at 860-997-6802. I'm all across the country speaking and working in communities to try to heal this nation around making sure our kids are effecting positive change. And we need folks to continue to get involved. If there's a challenge, reach out to me. I love to come and support and help you heal that community, one community at a time. And what we need from people is just to be honest, have an honest conversation about what you need and an honest conversation about how we can work together. We can't save people by not telling the truth about what the issues are. I always bring it back to a doctor. The reality is if I have a cut on my arm and I need stitches, if I never tell you that, it's going to become infected. When it becomes infected, sometimes it's too late. You're going to lose your arm. Once you lose your arm, you can't blame the doctor. It's because you didn't say something from the beginning. And that's what's happening with our communities now. We got to speak up when we know things aren't going well, and we have to dig in to support when we know that help is needed.
Yeah, and when I had reached out to you, Dr. Marco Clark here, I wanted to make sure that we touched on and addressed the importance of teaching our boys how, you know, becoming men means also identifying earlier than later what healthy, meaningful relationships are. And our conversation tonight, I hope that people will see their participation or involvement or contribution, volunteering. Like you said, I don't care if it's an hour a month that you can give. Imagine 100 people giving you an hour a month. It's some type of involvement, but that is truly creating a foundation of support in teaching our boys what healthy and meaningful relationships are. So in the next couple minutes, we're going to wrap it up in a little bit, but talk to me a little bit about your feelings on why that's important to teach our boys to identify. And I believe where I'm going with that is I believe, based on the things that you're saying, is you're an action kind of guy. So I'm a solution kind of woman. And I believe that when you jump in, you get pleasantly surprised how much you enjoy it. But to see the glow on a kid's face or a young boy that maybe doesn't have a mom and you're a woman volunteer, that comfort in what you feel, that void in that young man can impact that boy's life forever. So that's teaching him right then and there. That's a good relationship for me. Like, that's good for me. So talk to me a minute. What do you feel about that? Healthy and meaningful relationships, teaching them young.
I think that we have to train our young men from the beginning, train them as from babies. You know, I've been working with a group of young fathers around not making their sons into this womanizers, and understanding that, like, training them from the beginning says a lot. Teach them about academics and not how many girlfriends you have. Teach them about how you can read books and how being smart is greater than being popular. That starts at an early age, and it's a connection of training fathers to become these great young men to grow up and understand what's so important about raising a young black male, and how we sometimes change the trajectory of their life by what we input in them when they're younger. And so as I'm working with these young fathers, they're beginning to say things and read stories to their sons and begin to teach them about how they can become positive young males, because the black males were born leaders, and teaching them what that is supposed to be. We're supposed to be the leaders of the community and not the followers. And that starts before a child can even talk, and we can instill that kind of information in them, that when they grow, they recognize the importance of being great young men. And in my school organization, one of the things we do is that we have this thing called Family Matters, and in the morning we have the male sit on one side of the auditorium and the young lady sit on the other. And part of the reason is that I made the young men understand that we have more girls in our school than young men. But when the young ladies come in, you're to automatically give up your seat. And that's something that's being taught. And you're to automatically learn to open the door, automatically show chivalry. And for many of those students that walk in the door in August, they didn't know that. But by the time they are leaving in June, they're having a different conversation, and they're asking other guys, and they're making statements positively about young ladies, and they're leading things and stepping up because the information is being put there. It's so valuable that we do that in our community.
Yeah, and it's but what the kids are seeing, it's not necessarily doesn't even have to come out as talk. They're watching your actions. So that's another topic I wanted to get your view on before we wrap it up, is co-parenting. I think that's a great segue into that based off of what you just said.
I think the co-parenting piece is a very, very important subject. It is something that, you know, that our moms, I deal with the fathers that have these broken relationships with the mother of these sons. And I have to tell mom, listen, you know, women are great, but you can't teach a male how to become a male. You just can't do that. You can nurture and you can support, but you can't train them to be this what a young man is going to be. That's not the desire. And no matter how you feel about the father, that child is always going to want to be around their father or know their father or be a part of their their father. And so the relationship is important. Whether you get along or not, you have to find a median compromise, because the child's life is very important, and the maturation and how that what that, that young man becomes is based on the greatest compromise in the relationship that you can have. And so the co-parenting tool must become a great one. And if for whatever reason you can't work through that, then the schools have to be a great mediation. And so, for example, we have sometimes I've worked with our co-parents that can't get along, but the school has become the refuge. So when the young man is at the school, the father is able to come in and have lunch, and the mom feels great because the father supervised, and she doesn't feel like she has a supervisor because there are other other men involved that are around that father. And as we're doing that, we're cultivating the relationship, and we're working with the mom to open up more, to let her understand that that father is needed, and the relationship has to happen because the child needs it most.
How forward thinking of you. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Make everybody comfortable in their own skin, in their own right. Dad role, mom role, kid role. Make everybody feel good. Encourage everybody the way that they need to be encouraged, because everybody needs it differently. That's in itself even empowering that man, I believe, because we can talk to many fathers that might not have stepped up, but their heart breaks from that. And I don't think that we recognize that. If they had a little bit more support, how do we know that maybe they would have been more involved or could have been? And it's, you know, never too late is a message I would say to anybody that might be listening to where they feel that maybe they slacked or weren't as involved as they wanted to be. It's never too late. And if that might not happen with your own child, there's other children that need you. So I like that. I like that. I think that's a tangible, supportive method of doing that. And it can probably smiles from ear to ear, just quality, a little bit of quality time between mom and dad, even if they're not together, without them fighting. Without them fighting. Leave the kids out of the grown folks' stuff. Okay, so wait. Oh, you know what? You have a book. You have a book, right?
I have a book. It's called Parents, Where Are You? The Kids Are Out of Control, and the Parents Are Out of Control, too.
So you guys, when you go to the website, check out that book as well. What kind of words, I have one more question after this, but what kind of words, I want you to be able to take a couple of minutes, no restrictions, no nothing. Say what's on your heart, what you want to say to the audience and the listeners, mom, dad, family, community, corporation, whoever. What do you want to say?
We must come together as a community to be truthful about the challenges that we have. We have a broken community as a black community. We failed our children. We failed, some of our parents have failed our kids. The community has failed our school system, and the churches have failed our community tremendously. We have to go back to the roots of what helped us and got us to a point of freedom and thought and work on the academics, because education is truly the great equalizer. Respect is the benefactor of all of it. And the work that we have to put in back into our community is going to solve everything. When kids are literate, they have options. And if they have options, they won't be on these corners. And when they have folks that love and support and open their doors to provide training and options for them, we'll have a better society. And so we got to start working on that and stop lying that our communities are together. Stop using cliches in church on Sunday, but never seeing pastors in schools, or never galvanize a community to go to the school board to say our schools are becoming more and more segregated with less resources, but you're beginning to still preach about everything in the Bible that people can't relate to because many of them can't read, when the work that you're doing is grounded in reading and research. And so if we can come together holistically and be honest about the challenges that we're faced with, and stop blaming everybody else for our problems, we can begin to see a successful light at the end of the tunnel.
And I want to add, come to these judge-free zones. And there's no shame in saying, I don't know how to do that. Come watch. Come observe. You don't have to do nothing. But when there's an event or if there's a volunteer opportunity and you're not sure of what you can do, but there's just this little nagging something in you that you want to be more involved, go and just learn, observe, feel the synergy of it, and you do it at your own pace. But definitely being around that positive environment will have an impact on those that are wanting to get more involved as well. I can't tell you how grateful I am that you made time out tonight and for what you do. Your passion, I think you've kind of curtailed it and kept it in rein tonight. I think that you are a power to be reckoned with, and I thank you for what you do. And any way that I personally can help, I want to be there. You mentioned you're opening up another school. So you just keep that in the back of your mind. I mean that from my heart. Any way that I can help, I will do my best. And if I could, I will. And if not me, then somebody in my network. I'll have a referral. You can believe that. Last question for you. Let's say that somebody wrote a book about you, your biography, your story, your life on this earth. But the book, unfortunately, got destroyed. So now the author's coming back to you and saying, hey, sit down and talk to me so I can rewrite this book. He comes to the point where his question is, what impact did you leave this world with? What did you leave us with? What's the impact?
You know, It's a consistent fight that I fought forever. I wake up in the morning fighting, and I go to bed with the same fight. But in the midst of that, I'm a champion, and I have a champion spirit from the time I wake up. I'm a champion in the middle of the day, and I'm a champion at the end of the day. No matter how tired I am, I always feel like I'm a winner because I believe in that. My legacy is going to be based on those that come after me. How many of those individuals were able to uplift a community? And so for me, I get tired of all of the challenges. I get tired of the excuses from people. And that I want somebody to say he lived his life without any excuses. He didn't care about the way people felt about him. He didn't care about the fact whether or not you talked about him, you liked him, you disliked him. Doesn't matter. My life is about service. And at the end of the day, like Dr. King said, let my living not have been in vain. Forget about the many awards and the many stages and shows and television shows and everything I've done. That means absolutely nothing if I have not helped somebody. And so it's about the work, and if I have not told you the truth, yes, you mentioned the passion. Sometimes a leader, you get tired of talking to black people who complain and have no livelihood, no real support, and it's just a bunch of complaining. It gets on your nerves. The reality is that I like to tell them to go to hell. That's just where I am. I get fired up sometimes. And, you know, the reality is that you're like, well, what are we going to do? It's just a bunch of excuses that we have in our community. And I'm just kind of sick of the way that we look at the community as a whole. Instead of just really telling some people, get up off of your behind and stop making excuses as to why things aren't working. And what are you doing to fix it? So my life have been a life of service. And that I gave to humanity to the best that I could, and that those individuals that came after me will be able to service others with the same light and the same energy that I've given to them.
Well, thank you for your truth and your honesty. And I know for a fact that you definitely leave some footprints, impactful footprints. And again, listeners, thank you for making time to listen out, listen in on myself and tonight's guest, Dr. Marco Clark, chat about something very, very important. And I hope that you do some self-reflection and replay this and apply it to how you can, what you can do in your life. Small is large. So don't think what you got to contribute, whether it's a little bit of time or a lot of bit of time, a little bit of money to help with the schools and books and the extra things. I'm sure that the costs related to running a creative school, journalism and media arts. I mean, how about you sponsor a field trip? I mean, there's so many different things that you can do. So just reflect and ask yourself, what have you done and what can you do? And I'm with you, Dr. Clark, about moving forward and stay pissed off, stay passionate, stay doing what you're doing because you're practicing what you're preaching and you're giving us your truth. Because you're not, it's not a negative kind of ticked off. It's a I'm tired of this. We can do something about it. We want change. I'm going to do my part. So that's not a negative. So everybody come to the table, speak your truth, give how you can, and join us for our next show. Dr. Clark, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You are very welcome. You have a good night, okay?
You do the same. Thanks.
Take care.